Hello and welcome to another episode of Would You Date a Scientist? I'm Wendy Gannon, your host, and I'm joined today by Victoria Coco, or Vicky, as she's sometimes called. Vicky just told me a story about her name, and I don't know if you want to share it or not.
I'm fine.
Anyway,
it's funny.
Welcome. How are you, Vicky? How are you doing?
Fine, thanks. How are you, Wendy? Welcome. Thank you for having me, and hi to all your listeners. This is fantastic. I'm enjoying this.
Brilliant. Yeah, so this is actually the first recording of the year. I think we're going to be the fourth episode of the year, but I've not recorded since last year. And boy, have I changed. Like, I'm more upbeat. I'm like ready for work. It's great. It took so this is the second week back. Last week, I don't know what it was like for anybody else, but it was absolute hell for me. I just felt so lethargic and like normally raring to go, but definitely need another week off.
I think the world needs another week off right now, to be honest.
Yeah. 100%. So what's your favorite piece of tech ever, Vicky?
I am going to go with what Dr. Camp Kiss said about streaming music. Yes. And I'm going to add to that and say that my sound deafening headphones, I love those things.
Oh.
I mean, if I want to just listen to some music and just not be interrupted, those are the best. But then I'm going to go also with, I think is one of your favorites, is my Switch. I love my Switch.
Oh, yes, Vicky. Yes. Okay, so over Christmas, I got some new games, like really quick ones. Yeah? What have you been playing?
Okay, I'm gonna really date myself, but I am a Pokemon fanatic. My daughters got into it, and it was a thing, and they were young, and I think probably too young to understand some of the nuances of Pokemon.
Yeah.
And so there would be meltdowns, total meltdowns over a fainted something or other. And so I had to learn in order to help them through this. And also the fact that at the time, a Game Boy would probably be about 2 years of their allowance. So
yeah.
I wasn't just going to randomly go out and buy technology just because. And so I learned it, and I have to say I got hooked. And I'm a Pokemon fan, and that's my number one game on there. But Tetris is also a good mind melter, relaxing utility too. So there you go.
amazing. So over Christmas, and like I can't remember the names of them now. So one of them was where, and it's only a short game. One of them was where you are a husband who's just got married, but you're an octopus, and you have. It's so funny. It's really difficult to to control. It's hilarious, and I had so much fun playing that.
No one wants to marry an octopus. You just kind of fall into that. So like a 90-day engagement thing.
So you had to walk really well. Like normally, I'm doing all of the on video. I'm flailing my arms everywhere. So you had to try and control the walking really well, because if your wife found out that you actually weren't her husband and you were an octopus, then like you'd have to start again. And then
that's imagination.
Like it's really good. You have to like guide your daughter around like the.
I'll look into that one.
Yeah, it's really good. And the other one was like a choose your own adventure. You have to have your sound on and do it alone. But you play this girl, and then you go to some caves and like ghostly, ghouly things happen. And depending on what you reply to different people, takes you your relationship with them a different way. And the ending can be completely different. And that was really cool. Oh. I'll find out what they're called and I'll
let you. Like those ones. I like storybook kind of, journeys and
really good.
I like those ones, yeah.
Anyway, that was a lot of talking from me.
Yeah.
So, Vicky, tell me about yourself. Tell me about your career.
My background is in math. I went to the University of Waterloo here in Canada for that. And I had, we had a co-op program, so you could pay your way through university, but at the same time, you had the opportunity to get into different fields and see and try things on, and some worked, some fits. I knew early in the game that I was not meant to to do financial stuff. I enjoyed it. I liked it. And everybody said, ooh. In Canada, Bay Street is our Wall Street. And I spent actually 3 or 4 years on Bay Street. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't my goal. I wanted to see more things other than just dollars and cents. So I actually started a stint in manufacturing, and I started with something called an MRP system, and that's an acronym from way back, but it was heavy on the data. And I found out that that's what I really enjoyed, was more working at the data. So I went from kind of a business analyst to a data analyst. And that's probably the roots of data science is in that area. And I stuck with manufacturing, and I've been in it 30 years now. Wow. My husband and I also realized that we're not very good at making money for other people. That we much prefer, if we're going to put in the long hours, that it be our bank that's filling up, not someone else's.
Yeah.
And we made the break probably very early, 3 or 4 years into our career, to go it alone. And we went it alone separately for a while there, but we just figured out that the whole was bigger than the sum of the parts, and joined it up. And we've been doing this since 1988 or 89.
Brilliant.
So I know I'm dating myself on that one, but I've seen the role of data science. I've always been the keeper of the data in this, and been the person to always be in on the team, talk data structures and stuff like that. So that's what brings us to here in manufacturing.
Wow. I would be really interested to hear how data has changed over the years.
Oh, if you want to talk flat files, batch processing, because the nature of a plant is it runs, and then at the end of the shift or the end of the day, and often there's three shifts, that's when everything got updated through a flat file or whatever information. And we've gone from that to databases and, real-time technology. The communications on the shop floor have come a long, long way, because it's not an environment that's really conducive to communication, because there's a lot of other machinery, there's magnets, there's a lot of physical noise, those kind of things. So that had to improve. And once it did start improving, the massive quantity of data that you do have on the shop floor suddenly came to life. And I think the industry now is grappling or working hard towards how do we maybe standardize that data.
Yeah.
Or what do we do with that data? I know our customers, they may have 10 years of data sitting in a database someplace and are tapping into it. And how you go about that is very interesting. And what they're doing with it is very interesting. They're not just talking bottom line things. They're talking, information that they can pass on to customers, information they can pass on if they're a parts plant, information they can pass on to an assembly plant and stuff like that.
Interesting.
So it's fascinating to see how it's really changed.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see where it's going to change from here as well.
Yes. I hope to be able to see it happen. I think there are people working hard kind of standardizing data at kind of modularizing data, what a shift data should look like, what a machine data should look like, what quality data should look like. And I think that's what people are working hard on right now.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that we've answered a lot of those questions with the company that I'm with right now. I hope we're part of that future. But right now, a lot of the focus is on changing over what used to be the KPIs and when it key performance indicators.
Yep.
Using the data to, before it was pretty calculated data, and there would be a lot of input on it, a lot of spreadsheets, say, behind it. Now we're able to look at those KPIs from real-time data off the shop floor and being able to drill on down into whether that's accurate data yep. that you can work with. And even the mindset around working with real data versus calculated data is work in progress, and it's all good stuff though, but it's fascinating.
Brilliant. So 10 in 6 is your company.
Yes.
What exactly are you doing?
Okay. Let's start with the name.
Yeah.
10 and 6 means 10% improvement in 6 months.
Okay.
So it's in our name what essentially we do. We try and talk to our customers and get them efficiency, shop floor efficiency. That's where we start, shop floor efficiency down. I have to say we've never just met 10%, and I have to say we've never needed the 6 months either.
Bravo.
So I think once you start that gateway of data into a system that people can use it, then they start asking questions. And usually we work with them to, at the heart of it is data collection. We work with the automation that's on the floor through something called a programmable logic controller. I'm terrible with acronyms. PLC. If anybody's done a backstage tour at Disney World, you've seen oodles of them, because Disney World runs off of these little components. And what they are is very focused machines or computers on the shop floor that direct the automation, but then also they have memory on the side where you can collect information. So we're collecting, say there's a weld. The PLC would decide if it's okay, safe to weld, like are the parts there, is all the equipment there, is the operator safe, those kind of things. And that little machine will say, okay, you can weld, does the weld, and then moves on. But then along the side of that logic, which is called ladder logic, I know I'm going really deep here, but there's also memory and data that we collect, and that's the world we work in 90% of the time. But then also there may be some operator input, like good parts, bad parts, and maybe some visual, they scrap that part, so they will input that apart. So there's a lot of operator data too that's being collected off the shelf floor.
Brilliant. It's so good to hear a different way of collecting data and using data
yes.
science. Because I think most of the people we've spoken to are in tech. You know, algorithms and AI and stuff like that. This is
yes.
super interesting. It's just showing our listeners that how broad data is. It's literally everywhere. And there's so many places that are using it to improve the way they work and their output and their revenue, I suppose.
yes. I mean, bottom line is huge, but then also to have the kind of the descriptive information of how things get done and be able to pass that on is huge. Some manufacturers have to do what they call lot tracing, meaning that they have to be able to track a part back to a certain lot.
Yep.
That's bottom line intensive to do that work, but at least now we can help and make it a much more streamlined process.
Brilliant. So what struggles have you had within your data science world?
The technology changes very, very quickly. I think the thing that we've learned is to back off what is the newest, latest, and not get distracted by it. That's huge. I've seen companies like us just kind of go down that rabbit hole and not recover. So that's one thing. Staying focused on what works is huge. Other struggles would be that the manufacturing industry is not exactly an early adopter in these areas. So in order for me to find information how to go about this, I've had to look at other industries like healthcare, retail, marketing, those areas, and learn how they've done their procedures, or learned actually their learning process, and trying to adapt it to the manufacturing environment, and because it's just not there. So I think that's our biggest challenge. We certainly got the data collection side down pat, and we've know what clean data is, and we know what certifiable data is, and those things. And yes, I could go on and on about these things, what we've learned about that area.
Yeah.
But
go on, sorry.
Looking to other industries is where I've had to learn more.
That's interesting. Is it quite difficult to get that information and bring it across to your industry? Have you had to make changes in that?
Yes. I think one thing that's very interesting with sort of perhaps healthcare data is that they follow a scientific method. They have pre-approved methodologies of how that data looks, pre-approved industry standard on peer evaluations of that data. There isn't that in the manufacturing world right now. So in order to go forward, I also have to kind of review what else is going on in the industry and to make sure. Yeah. So that to compare those areas. And we've all heard, you know, we hear about Kegel and things that people breakthroughs, right? Not everything is a breakthrough. Sometimes it's just a really good step forward. And, you know, we hear about the Amazon data scientists and all those other things, very different field. But yeah, we have to go through that, our process too. And we have to discover what that process is.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said about kind of putting the new technology to bed. Like, yes. There's only so often you can update your technology.
Exactly. Like,
there's only so often you can update your phone, you know.
Yes. And you can't expect your customers to go down that path with them either.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So find the software that you like, use it till you can't use it anymore. And then, like, yeah, absolutely. I've not thought of that.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give somebody who's just starting in data science or is looking to pivot into data science from their current role?
Aside from networking, I mean, that's the obvious underlying one. It's talk to people. And I guess in a forum I saw it or someplace, it was a cartoon and it was a room full of people. And the speaker says, so you all want a data science? And everybody puts up their hands. And they says, so who wants to learn the math? Then half the hands go down. And who wants to learn how to program? And the other half of the hands go down. And so, yeah, I think there is that understanding what it is. It isn't just the shiny, wow, look what competition did and stuff like that. I get that. And it is math intensive. So I understand that. I wouldn't tell someone not to do it, but just understand that that's what's there. And I do go to conferences and I do talk to a lot of people along those lines. But then there's the other side of it. That's the understanding what you're getting into. But then there's some hard, and those are hard skills. Along those lines, other hard skills that you will want to do is, and I'm not saying have you a master at it, but you're certainly going to have to understand, is data engineering. And I'm going to talk about my company as a, when we collect data and people see your actual databases, they're looking, those aren't relational databases. Those aren't in any normal form possible. And that's true because we're looking at speed. So what our data looks like, we have to get that data into a database, get it secure as fast as possible because the shop floor is not going to stop for that.
Yeah.
And so you don't want a data structure that has multi-level indices or has a lot of updates or deletes in it. You want to get that data in. So when you look at data engineering, you have to understand what you're trying to do with that data, and your data will evolve as you get to an end goal. So a data scientist does have to understand that element is there, that you have to massage the data or get it to an end goal, either through cleaning. In this case, cleaning would be for us. We have APIs that go after the data and sort it out. And then the other kind of hard skill you need to have is in your industry. You do need to know the analytics that is going on in that industry, and that may fit for you. As I said, I enjoyed the financial world, but I wasn't cranking my gears in any ways. Their KPIs or their acid tests, whatever. It's like, yeah, it's money. Honestly, people are going to shoot me and go, what do you mean? It's just money. But it's true.
They'll agree with you, I'm sure.
you have to understand the what analytics are going on in your business. Those are kind of a hard, but then there's the one really kind of soft talent that you need to develop. And I see it, and it's great if you can get it. And that's the storytelling side of data. Can you tell a story with data? And there's plenty of really good people out there doing some really good courses, online courses with that. I don't have that at my fingertips right now, but I'm going to refer to the movie Don't Look Up.
So good.
I know. But when they you know, the Leo DiCaprio character, and the guy says that no one wants to hear math. I want you to tell it like it is, tell the story. And then suddenly he becomes this very suave techie guy, you know, yep. He's got that nerd chic down and everything. But that's so true. And if you can't go into a boardroom or a health clinic or something like that and start talking percentages without telling a story, because everybody's just going to tune out within seconds. So yeah. That's kind of the areas that if I were to tell someone to look at data sciences, and I talk to some people, and I say, I think you're really good at this. I think you should do that. These are kind of the areas that you need to buff up on aside from your standard data science courses on prediction and those kind of things.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much. I'm actually recruiting for a role at the moment where yes. The whole C-suite, everybody understands data. They know what they're talking about. I've never had that. It's so good. Like you don't have to really change your communication style to talk to the people above you that you're really trying to get results for. It must be so much better.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, I've done it myself. I've put some people to sleep. I get it. But right now, I have to put myself to sleep.
So, do you think, talking about education-wise, and like, things are massively different over in Canada where you are to America, we've got lots of listeners. We've got some in the East, really happy about that, and over in the UK. So, what do you think it's important for somebody to have a master's degree? It's over here in the UK. So kind of to stay in academia as long as you can to learn as much as you can. Or do you think it's more important to finish a degree or do a boot camp and then get some real world experience?
You know, I think it's a master's degree in general. And when we interview, this is kind of the thing, is that I think taking a few years in an industry and then getting your master's degree on any level is a good approach. I think that unless
the company will pay for it.
Yes, then there is that. There's a lot of incentives. And then I guess you're right. Different countries have different approaches to their education system and what's available. I think to get a master's in data science right now is kind of tough because it's not readily being taught. I think my alma mater, Waterloo, which is big for their math programs, have just started into their data sciences programs. So to get a master's would be tough right now. And I certainly couldn't do it because I'm not in a town where it's offered. I do online stuff.
Yep.
I would not, if someone is in front of me, I don't know, you're a recruiter yourself, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. So I think I would judge more or have a better appreciation if someone was in front of me interviewing. I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, because that's your area, if that they've taken a master's but do have also industry experience. Unless you are an academia person and that's what you want, then go for it. I mean, I'm really impressed with how young some people are getting their PhDs these days.
Exactly.
But if that's what you want, go for it. But if you want to be in the industry, I think you need to spend some time in the industry. I think you're going to do your master's degree so much more. It's going to be more beneficial for you if you do that.
So my thoughts on this are, client-wise, it's a 50-50 split.
Okay.
About half of them would like them to have a master's degree, even a PhD. Half of them don't mind, like real world experience. Now, I do tend to speak to the clients that are wanting PhD and wanting masters and saying, look, we need to be as inclusive as possible here. Some people can't afford to go and get a master's degree or a PhD. You know, some people who have taught themselves at home are going to be better at the role at a really young age than somebody who's gone through academia and has got 10 years world working experience. You know, I don't think, yes, it's gonna, you can see that they've got the well-rounded education and the theory behind it, etc. But I don't think it's the be all and end all. I think every single, if I present you with a candidate who hasn't been to university, I think you should judge people on their skills. If you're looking for somebody who needs to know all of that theory, that's a different matter. Yeah, but if you're looking for somebody to do coding, data engineering, data science role, I personally, as someone who hasn't got a master's degree or a PhD, think that, you know, it shouldn't be at the top of the list.
No, no. I mean, I'm a rotten student, so
I mean, I'm awful.
I mean, I definitely apply better than I learn in the classroom, and there's tons of people out there that are like me, and I wouldn't want to pass that over based on an education. We've hired the top, because we were part of the co-op program, we've hired the top of the class, and I can't say that they did that much better than anybody else. So.
Exactly. I think it depends on how you've been brought up, your life choices, what you've experienced. You know, it's just like how you take on the world and how your brain works. So that's an interesting chat. So what is your favorite project or piece of work that you've done?
I mean, I've had hands in a few things, but I love running around in the Google Earth world. I don't know if any of your listeners are doing that. There's a phenomenal API in there. Their platform is just, it's endless, and it's fun. And it's Earth Sciences, which is just, you know, something everybody can see, right? It's not just numbers. But then they also package their data, and this is where I kind of go back to data engineering. Their JSON files and their dictionary type files, I mean, just trying to, you are going to get so much better if you can start looking at those things and understanding and seeing the data. That's a really cool area to play in. I love it. I'm a hockey fan, so any hockey stat that comes my way, I have to dig apart. And manufacturing is great, but I like some outside areas. I do love going to conferences and hearing what other people are doing. Like I was at a women's in data science conference in Michigan, and they were talking about how they catch hackers by being data scientists. And when I think that data scientists really have a hacker mentality to begin with, that was a really interesting conversation. So was fun.
Can you, is there like open source code that you can go and do a project on the Google Earth stuff?
Yes. Well, they have an API.
Okay. Perfect.
So, and they actually have an environment that is with Python code in it and stuff like that. It takes a little digging to get there.
Okay.
But so you can actually plug in their APIs into your Python code very easily. And I know I'm getting really techy here, but
really good to know.
It's cool stuff. It really is.
Okay. Yeah. Because, you know, we recommend that people, if people haven't really got that real world experience or they're pivoting, to do a couple of projects to show the hiring manager or the team, et cetera, that you can do it. But that would be really, really interesting one to do.
Yes.
As you said, you can physically see it.
Yes. And they do have a lot as far as photography and the data behind that, but then there's also more descriptive data, world data, earth sciences data. It's an amazing environment. It really is.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. That's great. So I love this conversation. I love you. So what do you think data science is going to look like in the future?
That's really good. And thank you for that question. It is actually you've asked it a few times before, and it kept me up last night, to be honest.
Well, I'm glad I asked.
So good for you. You're doing your job well. I see, and we talked about different industries being at different levels, and I see the healthcare industry. It's just, I think it's, so far it's turned it inside out and helping it. And I also see that in the retail, as I said, the online choosing, predictive, those Amazon, Netflix, those kind of areas. And I hope I can say those things, but different industries are going to go at a different pace. And I see that that's going to be an ongoing thing. I see it in manufacturing, and I see that's where data sciences are really going to be helping the different industries along. On a really nerdy technical area, I am very, very excited about what they're kind of coming up with unsupervised neural network learning and in those areas, because that's just fascinating. It's bringing up questions that we never even knew was a question, never even knew we had answers for.
Yep.
So that area, I do a lot of reading in it. I don't have a whole lot of hands-on with that, but I am, that's a fascinating world to me. And I see a lot happening there. And when that starts getting applied to different parts of the world, I it's going to be phenomenal what's going on.
And we touched on like things changing in the future earlier on. I can't fathom what, and I think about this often, what things are going to be like. Often think what, you know, what's music going to be like?
Because
we had, you know, like the jazz and disco, and I'm a massive drum and bass fan. And like, where's it going to go from here?
I can't
even contemplate. And I suppose that's the point. You can't, can you? And we just need, we need this next generation to come in and show us olds how to do it.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, I look at my own daughters and how they use data and how they use devices and stuff, and I wouldn't have even dreamed of it. And I've grown through it. I mean, I used to work, I don't know, that's again, really dating myself. Archie used to be the first kind of protocol for internet. And at that time, my daughter was in daycare and they were talking internet at the daycare, and she knew a little bit of DOS, believe it or not, daycare, and she would help spark up programs in DOS at the daycare. And I'm thinking, you know, that's just a reality. I mean, for good or for bad, there is some growing up in that era and social media, there's a lot of downfalls with that, but you know, what they're going to do with data and technology is going to be mind-blowing, and I'm really looking forward to it. And I do have these conversations, and it's not the "oh mom" kind of conversations. It's like, what's going on? What are you doing? It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. So I remember, like, my dad worked for a company called GEC Marconi when we were little, and he had, like, we were the first people in the street to have a computer and IBM compatible. Yeah. He told me it was.
Yeah. I mean, IBMs are really expensive.
Yeah. He was like that. I mean, that was after the Spectrum. So this was like Dig Dug on the screen and Zonix and stuff like that. And I remember getting the internet. And then watching the tech go from nothing, basically.
Yeah.
Me having like a book to write a spider program, the spider to come and get the words out of its web.
Yeah.
I don't know how I remember this stuff. I always thought that I was always going to be at the forefront of technology. I'm going to know everything that's going on. And then I had a child.
Exactly. They had a pad in their hand at 6 months.
I know. Like, she's 22 in a month's time. I've completely lost it.
Yeah.
No, it's all gone. I feel so old and useless sometimes.
I mean, I struggle to keep up to them, and they're not in the tech. Well, my one daughter is in the tech field in the green space. So I struggle to keep up with the technology.
Love that.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Let's talk about, you said you went to a Women in Data Science conference. Let's talk about diversity. Forgot the word then. Like, you don't talk about it enough.
I'm old, I've seen it all.
Let's talk about diversity within data science. What's it like over there?
You know what? In the manufacturing world, I will say I was often the only woman on the entire floor of 200. And that got me in trouble because the company that I worked for, and this is just kind of give you a template of where I came from, the company I worked for insisted I wore a dress or a skirt. And then so I go on the shop floor and immediately get a grievance against me because, you know, those kind of things. And, you know, you can only persist in that environment so long before you are, you know, it affects too much of your life, and you know, you should, and you hear it too many times, no, you should be putting up with it. No, you hear it too many times, and that was a big reason for going on my own, because I'm going to shape my own company and how that approach is. What I have seen, though, is that, you do see a lot more females in the project management area in manufacturing, which is good, and it's huge. I see more diversity in other industries, though, and I'm going to call out that industry, our industry a little bit, but I see movement. And as long as there's movement, and as long as there's people like you and I talking about it, women are half the world.
Women are half the world.
So when we talk about diversity and you talk about women, I think we're being as inclusive as any other group when we talk about that. Canada is a very diverse area, and I think in many areas we're setting some really good standards, and I think that's great. Can it be improved? Yes. As far as though the whole women in technology, I have two daughters. They're both very technically oriented. I figured at some point along the line to quit fighting my fight, because you can only carry that, that sword and shield for so long. And so then I turned my focus on to making sure it was a better world for my daughters. And that's how I'm going forward. But now that I'm kind of on the other side of that, because they're adults capable of taking care of their, picking up their own sword and shield for themselves. Yeah, I do go to conferences and I do talk and I do, you know, I'd like to think I'm setting a bit of a standard being a woman in this field, especially being a business owner. That helps. I wish I could keep more women employed in my company. Yeah. Two things. And as a recruiter, maybe you can help me with that. I don't get resumes from women. I think manufacturing kind of puts them off.
Okay.
And I'd certainly like to hear what you have to say about that. The two women that we have hired and brought on had such fabulous side hustles, and I strongly believe in side hustles, that they've gone on to do fabulous in that world. Brilliant. So, you know,
this is it. You're supporting them so much that they've gone off to do their own thing, which is amazing.
Yeah. Yay me. But that's not entirely true. They're supporting themselves. And I think as talking about movement, to be able to do that is where we're at. And I can't say that I support my guys any less than I support my girls.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, that is an interest of mine, though, is to kind of set standards. And I apologize to my guys if they ever feel badly. I love my boys. My guys, even to call them boys, listen to me. I apologize so badly.
I mean, it is not what it right. Is. So I started my recruitment career in warehouse and driving. Okay. So very similar. And I used to have to go and see clients, warehouse managers, factory managers, owners of big driving companies. And I am with you when you say it gets tiring, the comments, the touching, it's just, and you kind of, I was so used to it that it was okay, you know, but it's really not.
I remember, you know, it's like, and you, when it's happening, and even just even the condescending conversations, and not all guys, like, come on, let's be real. This is a small part of the, a small part of the population, and less and less. I mean, originally, to be consent. Just it was a day-to-day. Some bosses, that was their day-to-day to be like that. And you get to the point where you go, okay, I deserve it. No, you don't deserve it. And nor do I think that the person doing it is entirely aware of, but you know, it's just the kind of the privileged kind of thinking that it doesn't matter what you think, I'm going to say or do what I want. And it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're even an interesting person to this other person. It's a cycle, and it's tough. And but you know, you do toughen up. You learn to stand your ground. You learn to pick your battles. I can't say that in every job I stayed at that I stayed. I've left jobs because of it. Yes, I will outright say that, because you know, you know that at some point you're never going to achieve what you want to achieve in that area.
Absolutely. So, look at us putting the world to rights.
I'm not going to do it in my little corner of the world, but at the same time, I'm just going to set the best examples I can.
So I'm just going to quickly touch on you're not getting resumes from women. So
yes, I want to hear this.
So I've spoken about this before. If you put your job descriptions in the same place each time, you're going to get the same people applying. There's also a website that I can share, and I've done this before. It is the Gender Bias Decoder. It's on Total Jobs. You can put in your entire job description. You copy and paste it into their little box. It tell you if you're using male coded words or female coded words within your job description. Okay.
Yeah.
So if you are using all male coded words, there's like rock star and stuff like that. They're masculine words.
Sports kind of technology. Yes.
You are not going to get females applying for the position if you've got masculine words. Okay. If you've got feminine words, then both are going to apply. So you can have, so everyone just use feminine words because then everyone's going to apply. But you can put this in and it tells you what percentage you've got of male and female. So 50-50 is fine. You can send me a job description. I can go through it with you point by point. There's things on there like you need, like offering job shares and stuff like that. I don't know if that's something you do. Brilliant. Again,
we're actually home-based.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. And I know that.
Oh, yeah. Very important. Sorry to talk over you then.
That's right.
With the education system, it's proven that women stop lower down. The majority of women, men go further in the education system than women do. There's more men with PhDs, more men with masters, more men with degrees, taking that into account would help to get more women into your workforce. If you took off, you need a master's. I don't know if you've got it on there, of course. But to anybody listening, if you take that off the top, not only for socioeconomic reasons, but also for diversity reasons, not just the gender divide, everything diversity, because people have such a hard time or problems getting into uni or discriminated against or had to leave for certain reasons, so that's, if you, I can talk to you about it afterwards if you need a little bit more, but I'll send you this Total Jobs Decoder as well.
That's fascinating, using the different wording. And right now with COVID, there's no hiring going on.
Yeah.
But right. I hope soon.
So let's get to my Paul Rudd question. He's in the back.
Oh, yeah, it's your Paul Rudd question. I guess your listeners should know that she has a full-size Paul Rudd statue right behind her, and I can see it.
Oh, so Vicky came onto my video chat with me, and she was like, I'm glad you've got the world's sexiest man there. He looks over me. He keeps me safe, don't you, Paul? So, this did start off as a Paul Rudd question, but it's kind of evolved, I suppose. Let's do the original Paul Rudd one. So do you think with these big old millionaires out there, billionaires, that I don't think should be there, do you think that they could make a real life Ant-Man?
Yes.
And take over the world and like do really dodgy stuff? If they do, how are we going to stop them? And what punishment should we give them?
I like this. This is juicy. I like this. Absolutely. There are people out there that are going to use any technology, including genetics, for their own wishes. And, they may not even see it as being evil. So, but what I have seen, and also, it's very prevalent in the movies that for every evil person, madness, there's not necessarily a good person that's their equal, but another evil person and who wants to be the evilest. So if we can develop a system that the evilest person gets the gains, you're going to set up some pretty interesting competition.
Right.
Evil against evil.
We could just put all of the evil people into Squid Game.
Or an island.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the most evil, the one who wins, is the one who gets to control that island. And then they get to live amongst, they get the, to control. So you go, let's put televisions around and just make it a Squid Game and socialize it.
Isn't there a Sylvester Stallone film like this?
I know. And let the let them duke it out. But the winner is the one who gets to control it all. And they get to throw, you know, bad technology at these people and let them, like, you know, cell phones with no cell service or self-driving Teslas, no roads, and just put them and watch them go crazy on this island, and they make tons of massive more money than they ever did on this the rights to this social media platform.
I've got a better idea. Don't make it an island, make it a different planet.
There you go, and it's safer.
They've got the means to get there.
They just jump in their little flight suits and go. Just program it and say, push the button, and ciao, bye. See you on the moon or Mars someplace.
Evil planet.
No, scaling it back in. Yeah, that's a challenge. And then that's why I kind of, I think every good detective has a criminal mind. Every good data scientist has a hacker mentality. And I think, I think that, you know, these people are going to be found out. Whether we can do much about it, I think it's going to be a combination of technology and man willpower and people force and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely going on. And way too much money. Way too much money.
Share it all evenly.
Yes.
Well, you know, like, I'm so okay. So, Vicky. Yeah.
No, good question. It's good. It's good food for thought. I like it.
Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. So, look, we've come to an end, but I would like to ask you, is there anything you'd like to plug or promote before we go?
I mean, other than my own company, 10 and 6,
go for
you
it.
Know, we're great. We take our customers on very different journeys, and we just have a brand new website that we're still tweaking, but that's fun. And we have great marketing people behind that. But other than data science as a whole, I would strongly encourage, because data is the way of the world. I mean, someone told me years back that if you were the operations manager of a company, you know everything because you're at the pulse of the company. You're probably the most powerful person out there. But then I see that being kind of a good segue into data sciences, is that you are the keeper of information, and that if you use it right and you are good at it, you can really successfully have a great life ahead of you, or a great career, I guess. Life and career balance, I understand that. But yeah, you can really go and do some really interesting things if you're the keeper of the data, and that's where it is. I enjoy it.
Lovely. Vicky, I like really appreciate you coming on.
I've enjoyed this so much. I really have.
Another shout out to the Women in Data Science group on LinkedIn.
They are good. And that's how we found each other.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
I aspire to be mostly for recruitment purposes, but yeah, they're doing some great stuff. I love their competitions that they do every year.
Yeah.
The other conference, and I will plug in, that I do go to every year is the ODSC. I haven't been going because of COVID and getting across the borders. And I open data science conferences, I believe. Okay. Anyways, they have a really good, yes. And they put on some really good conferences. So I will plug that, because that's what I enjoy doing. I do 3 or 4 times a year, go to different conferences. And I really enjoy that one. There's a whole different broad realm of what you can get, the trouble you can get into at that conference is great.
Are you ever going to come to one in the UK?
Well, there is one, there is an ODSC Europe, and yes, I am trying to get there. I have some good friends, James, how are you, in UK, and Marla, I'm trying to get there, but perfect. As the world is,
yeah,
I mean, will find a reason.
Definitely, yes, let me know, and I will come along to the ODSC conference.
And we get in trouble together.
We will make mischief. Yes. Oh, Vicky, thank you so much for coming on. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Yes, and thank you to your listeners. Have a great day.